I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World. Mustang Sally. Guess you better slow that Mustang down. It takes me back to 1991. That'd be the year The Commitments came out with that killer soundtrack. It's the tale of Jimmy Rabbit, the young Irishman who had this crazy notion to put together an American soul band in, of all places, Dublin. The movie was based on a book by novelist Roddy Doyle.
It became a bit of a burden after a while, you know. You couldn't go anywhere without some twit singing Mustang Sally. You know? So it is almost true to say I forgot I wrote it, you know.
But Doyle did decide to revisit the life of Jimmy Rabbit. Jimmy is back in Doyle's latest book, The Guts. It follows Jimmy as he navigates the twin disasters of colon cancer and Ireland's ongoing economic crisis.
When the Irish economy collapsed, there was a lot of nostalgia, if such a thing is possible, nostalgic analysis of what was going on. People harping back to the 80s, and a lot of 80s music being played on radio, accompanied by economists explaining what the word recession meant. And I found it a bit offensive, really. Funny at first, but a bit offensive.
Why?
Because perhaps the radio producers and the economists had lived their glory days in the 1980s, but I was a teacher in a working class area of Dublin in the 1980s, and there were nobody's glory days there. It was rough, you know. There was a lot of poverty and an unemployment rate that's almost science fictional. And it all got on my nerves, I've got to say, you know. And that's what drove me into the book, really. I wanted to see, I created those rabbit characters in the 1980s, and I thought, well, I'll add a quarter of a century to their lives and see how they're getting on in this new one.
It's a very serious kind of analysis that you give, but it is what happened. I'm just wondering, in that period where the Celtic Tiger was really muscular, who was actually benefiting from that?
I think everybody to a degree, but particularly if you're when you write about working class people, and you're never far from the fridge. Do you know what I mean? Because you need, I've written about people who don't know if there's going to be anything in the fridge at the end of the week. And that, you know, if you like, for most people, that wasn't an issue. And so that anxiety, that fear was gone or seemed to be gone.
But today that fear is back.
It is.
How about Jimmy Rabbit, our fictional Jimmy Rabbit? How did he fare during the Celtic Tiger boom years?
He did fine. I mean, he was a car salesman at first. He didn't like the job at all, but he did okay. You know, he could pay the mortgage. But then, kind of aided and abetted, nudged on by his wife, he formed this online music company. And that, I think, is where Celtic Tiger Jimmy comes in a good sense. You know, he becomes an entrepreneur. He uses his enthusiasm, you know, music. And so his love becomes his income. It becomes his living. And I think that would have been a great thing about the Celtic Tiger as well. I mean, it was when things started going wrong with the economy, there was an immediate condemnation of everything and everybody, you know. Flaying of our backs, what terrible people we are. We wasted it all. But no, an awful lot of people just opened these enterprises, and just something they thought they'd like to do. And because there was that bit of extra cash, people thought, well, I'd like to buy that, or I'd like to eat that. So it was great, in actual fact, you know. So Jimmy would have been a beneficiary of this, I suppose. People, you know, curiously, they have their own laptops because they have extra money. They wonder, well, what happened to Screaming Yahoos, that band from 1976? And they looked them up, and there's Jimmy offering both the two singles that they released
right
online. And they've a bit of extra money, so they buy it. But of course, one of the first things to go when the extra money is gone is that type of buying.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a real kind of luxury, isn't it, to go nostalgia digging?
Yes. So that, you know, the anxiety arrives on Jimmy's doorstep.
Jimmy also, as I said, has colon cancer in this novel, and that's happening against the backdrop of this economic recession. Jimmy's dad is very solicitous of his son and his son's health, it seems. He wants to make sure he's eating right, but Jimmy kind of doesn't want to hear too much about his own illness. Tell us about their relationship and how it's grown over the years.
Well, it's a great relationship, really, you know. I grew up in a, you know, I think it was Colm Tobin, the Irish novelist, said of my second novel, of Snapper, that it might be the first Irish novel ever to have a happy family, a functional family. And, you know, because you're supposed to be miserable, aren't you? You know, you're supposed to carry all this anger and misery, and I don't really.
Was that your family? Did you have a happy family?
Yeah. Generally, yes, yeah, and certainly very functional. You know, a good family,
and a good relationship with your own father.
Yes,
yeah.
And of course, I've gone through all the phases. I mean, when I was a teenager, I thought he was the biggest clown in Ireland, an absolute eejit. Then in my 20s, I began to appreciate
him. Oh, you just said absolute eejit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, well, okay, because that comes up a lot in the book. E-E-J-I-T, I think you spell it.
Yeah.
That would be idiot for our
it
American
would, yeah, except in Ireland, we tend not to bother with the extra syllable if at all possible. So, yeah, but over the years now, we've become, you know, good friends in a way, and with my mother, actually. So Jimmy is a bit like that, I suppose, and he's very lucky insofar as he can chat to his father, you know, and his father loves chatting to him. And Jimmy, I suppose, I've never had cancer myself, so it's not autobiographical, but I would imagine having received a diagnosis, he just does not want to go into his own house with that news, with that word. He doesn't want to plonk it on the kitchen table and tell his wife or his young children. They're younger than my own children, for example. So he just doesn't want to do that. So his father is the first person he tells.
As you said, Jimmy's still into music. He's getting some traction with this website, CelticPunk.com. Where does this connection to music come from for you? I mean, it often plays a role in your stories.
I am a firm believer that music is almost like a channel or a thread right the way back to childhood. And I think this is a great thing. I was at an event in Washington and a reader asked me, you know, isn't Jimmy a bit immature? And I said that I really think maturity is overrated. Why can't there be an element of that enthusiastic? You know, why wouldn't it be a good thing? Listening to music, it's a constant reminder of what we were like, because we still are that person, you know. And I think it's almost a Victorian thing that, you know, childhood is one thing, a preparation for adulthood, and then you shut that door and you become an adult. I really like that continuity. And when I see my children now, they're huge. All three of them are huge music enthusiasts. And that makes me personally very happy, you know, that if I've nudged them in that direction, that's a terrific thing.
Roddy Doyle is the author of The Commitments, The Snapper, and The Van, among other novels, as well as the just-released fourth part of those stories, The Guts. Roddy, thanks very much for coming in. Great to meet you.
Thank you.
Baby, here I am. I'm a man on the scene.
Yeah, it's not Mustang Sally, so I hope Mr. Doyle is cool with the selection. The American Delta by way of Dublin, another track from The Commitments. Thank you, Jimmy Rabbit. You can hear Roddy Doyle reading a bit from his new novel, The Guts, at PRI.org. From the Nan and Bill Harris studios at WGBH in Boston, I'm Marco Werman. We'll be back with you tomorrow.
Pretty little thing, let me light your candle, 'cause mama, I'm sure hard to handle now. Yes, I am.